Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 826, titled Bringing It All Back Home, Ukrainian Style, Part 2. This is being recorded on December 12th of the year 2014. As I am speaking, or rather, shortly before I began speaking today, again, 12-12-14, the Congress passed an assistance bill for Ukraine allowing the shipment of lethal military equipment, lethal American military equipment to Ukraine. And that is a very interesting development indeed. And one of the things that we are going to be looking at in this program is the lobbying of Congress, not only by the Ukrainian diaspora that we spoke about in For the Record program 824, Bringing It All Back Home, Ukrainian Style, Part 1, The Evolution and Triumph of Ukrainian Fascism. In that program, we were talking about the fact that the fascism of the OUNB and Stefan Bandera really had its origins under the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and that the Ukrainian nation as such was basically an organization in exile, and that the vast majority of those pushing for Ukrainian fascism and exceptionalism were living outside of Ukraine, and through the Promethean League, dating to just before the First World War, and especially active between the World Wars, then the Third Reich, and in the post-war period, organizations like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, the European Freedom Council, and others, basically perpetuated the right-wing, or ultra-right-wing, and fascist lobbying of the diaspora. Ultimately, that diaspora milieu was reinstalled in Ukraine, courtesy of the countries whose political agendas had been steered to an extent by that diaspora. We concluded the program that we do, For the Record 824, recorded 2 weeks ago, by looking at a new provision that Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko had installed. Basically, he wanted American, Estonian, and Georgian nationals to become Ukrainian cabinet ministers, and also wanted people from abroad to be able to staff the Ukrainian federal police, basically our equivalent of the FBI. Ukraine now has a Ukrainian-American State Department officer named Natalie Jaresko as finance minister or economics minister. She also basically managed hundreds of millions of dollars in funds that came from the U.S. Agency for International Development. USAID has very close connections to U.S. intelligence, and Natalie Jaresko apparently was engaged in some serious insider trading. There is also a Lithuanian-American who was appointed as Economic and Trade Development Minister, and a Georgian, also educated in the United States, was appointed as the Health Minister of Ukraine. That is more than a little interesting in light of what we have seen and what Poroshenko was proposing. He didn't waste much time. He has also granted citizenship to at least one foreign neo-Nazi who fought with the Azov Battalion. We're going to be taking a look at the return home of these prodigal sons and daughters. Not surprisingly, Natalie Jaresko was very active in Ukraine and working very closely with the government of Viktor Yushchenko, whose wife, Ekaterina Yushchenko, the former Ekaterina Chumachenko, was a key member of the U CCA, the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front organization in this country. She also was Ronald Reagan's Deputy Director of Public Liaison. The UCCA also gave Ronald Reagan Lev Dobryansky, who was his ambassador to the Bahamas, and then Dobryansky's daughter Paula was a member of Reagan's National Security Council, became an Under Secretary of State under George W. Bush, and ran the Tibet desk, which was active supporting Tibetan Buddhists with their SS occult connections again, and CIA support during the Cold War against China. There are indications that the Tibetans and also the Muslim Uyghurs of China are part of a destabilization effort against China as well. One of the things that we are going to be looking at great length and great detail, well, we're going to focus on very intensely, I really should say, are the circumstances that led up to the passage of this bill. Again, today on Friday, December 12th of 2014, Congress has approved lethal military aid to Ukraine. Much of the lobbying for that was being done by commanders of the various Punisher battalions that have committed atrocities in eastern Ukraine. These are overtly fascist organizations. One of them, by the way, funded by one of Ukraine's top Jewish leaders as well. I should say very quickly in passing, non-Jews have no monopoly on fascism. There were wealthy Jews who supported Hitler. They were, if they would contribute enough money, they were termed honorary Aryans. And there was a significant fascist presence within the Zionist movement. This is not to say that the Zionist movement is fascist. That is not true. But there is a very significant fascist element with it. And whether or not it becomes the dominant element in the Zionist movement is something that is in play right now. More about that in some future program. Again, some of the leaders of these Punisher battalions are the people who have been putting in FaceTime, lobbying the U.S. Congress to give Ukraine lethal military aid. The most notorious of these organizations, of course, is the Azov Battalion, whose leader, Andrei Beletsky, is a member of parliament, as are the other three Punisher Battalion commanders who were lobbying the U.S. Senate. Andrei Beletsky, in addition now to being a member of the Ukrainian parliament, as well as a commander of the Azov Battalion, has been pushing for Ukraine to develop nuclear weapons. Other members of the Punisher Battalions have been openly, and other members of the OUNB milieu, which ascended in Ukraine courtesy of the Maidan coup in February of this year, and the influx of the Ukrainian diaspora of OUNB stripe in the decades prior to that. One member of one of the Punisher Battalions openly stated that they were going to invade Russian territory. And in some of the promotional material that was being disseminated by the UCCA in connection with this bill, they were calling for American blood to be shed in defense of Ukraine. A former Ukrainian cabinet minister was quoted in their literature as saying that Americans should be ready to die for Ukraine. The point being that the OUNB Ukrainian diaspora is ready to fight to the last drop of American blood, which I'm sure will come as a greatly reassuring thing to members of the audience. We're also going to be taking a look at the admission by the Ukrainian intelligence chief that Russia has no organized military units in Ukraine. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the few reports that are still filtering out courtesy of Ukrainian media, including that the policy of drafting 16-year-olds and up into the Ukrainian military is resulting in the forced prostitution of young conscripts in the Ukrainian army, who are basically being used both male and female as comfort persons for other Ukrainian soldiers. Not surprisingly, in eastern Ukraine, the Punisher battalions are disappearing people and raping women, basically what you would expect from an organization that uses the SS as its role model. We're also going to be taking a look at Petro Poroshenko's introduction of a bill that critics have termed basically something that will institutes a ministry of truth like George Orwell's 1984. In For the Record 781 and 782, All's Well That's Orwell Part 1 and 2, I talked about the coverage in both the U.S. and in Ukraine of what is going on there and explicitly compared that with George Orwell's 1984. Now, the little bit of truth that is filtering out of Ukraine may be squelched still further because of Poroshenko's desire to basically institute. He has instituted the Ministry of Truth. Ukraine, by the way, stands on the verge of default on a $17 billion IMF loan. Ukrainian national bonds, by the way, are underwritten by, you guessed it, the U.S. taxpayer. So those are some of the things that we have in mind. And again, if people think I'm obsessing on Ukraine, I don't think we have ever been closer to a possible third world war than we are right now, with basically the Ukrainian diaspora driving the political consciousness of the West. Again, the Punisher Battalion commanders lobbying Congress for military aid. They got it. Some of them are openly pushing for nuclear weapons, and they are advocating invading Russian territory, and the milieu behind them is openly saying that Americans should be ready to fight and die for Ukraine. And when I update The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, the more time passes, the more convinced I am that Edward the Snowden operation was part of the destabilization of Ukraine and the beginning of Cold War II. It put a formal end to Obama's attempts at rebooting relations with Russia. And we're in our next update on Eddie the Friendly Spook. We're going to take a look at elements of commonality between the Maidan coup and Snowden's ride, as I call it. I am very supportive of the Russian position vis-a-vis Ukraine, and I am also very supportive of the National Security Agency and the GCHQ in their opposition to Edward Snowden. By the way, if you want to make yourself really, really unpopular, just do what I do. I am supportive, very supportive of the Russian position vis-a-vis Ukraine because it is right, and I am supportive and very supportive of the position of the NSA and the GCHQ vis-a-vis Snowden and the Snowdenistas because they are right and they're elements of commonality between the people behind Snowden and the people who are basically causing the U.S. to face off with Russia. We'll be taking a look at this program and in our next broadcast about Eddie the Friendly Spook. We're going to be taking a look at the U.S. Agency for International Development, Pierre Omidyar, the Habsburg milieu, the milieu of the Sweden Democrats, and many others as well. And so again, the Orwellian nature of the coverage, the possibility of a Third World War, and the Ukrainian diaspora's role in this are front and center. We're going to start off with an article by Robert Perry, who's been doing some very good work at Consortium News. This is from Consortium News of December 5th of 2014. Ukraine's Made in USA finance minister, and it reads in part as follows. Ukraine's new finance minister, Natali Jaresko, J-A-R-E-S-K-O, a former U.S. State Department officer who was granted Ukrainian citizenship only this week. Bear in mind the bill that Poroshenko had instituted. We spoke about that in 824. Beginning again, Ukraine's new finance minister, Natali Jaresko, a former U.S. State Department officer who was granted Ukrainian citizenship only this week, head of the U.S. government-funded investment project for Ukraine that involves substantial insider dealings, including $1 million-plus fees to a management company that she also controlled. Jaresko served as president and chief executive officer of Western NIS Enterprise Fund, or WNISEF, which was created by the U.S. Agency for International Development with $150 million to spur business activity in Ukraine. She also was co-founder and managing partner of Horizon Capital, which managed WNISEF's investments at a rate of 2 to 2.5% of committed capital fees, exceeding $1 million in recent years, according to WNISEF's 2012 annual report. So again, Natalie Jaresko, a former State Department officer, managed $150 million fund in Ukraine, which came from USAID, very closely linked to U.S. intelligence, by the way. And it was USAID that channeled money from Pierre Omidyar, who's bankrolling Glenn Greenwald's latest journalistic ventures, to the Ukrainian coup. Again, one of many elements of commonality between the elements that figure in the Snowdenista camp and the elements that are behind the coup in Ukraine. And again, I'm very supportive of the Russian position in Ukraine, and I am very supportive of the NSA and the GCHQ versus Edward Snowden, because they both are not only just, but they really are part of the same struggle, I guess you could say, the same struggle is as good as any. Bearing in mind the old Turkish proverb, he who tells the truth gets chased out of nine villages. Skipping down in the Robert Perry article, bear in mind that Natalie Jaresko, again, a U.S. State Department officer, and by the way, a Ukrainian-American from the Chicago area, as we will see, part of the diaspora. She is now the finance minister of Ukraine. She ran a $150 million fund in Ukraine that was capitalized by the USAID. She also ran a firm that invested that fund with 2 to 2.5% commissions, totaling over $1 million. Again, insider trading. And skipping down in Perry's articles, though it's difficult for an outsider to ascertain the relative merits of these insider deals, they could reflect negatively on Jaresko's role as Ukraine's new finance minister, given the country's reputation for corruption and cronyism, a principal argument for the U.S.-backed regime change that ousted elected President Viktor Yanukovych last February. And again, there's more information in the Robert Perry article that is in the description for the record 826, so you can read more about it. And still more about Natalie Jaresko and her business career and her career as a State Department officer. This is from the Naked Capitalism blog of December 4th of 2014. It's an article by John Helmer, spelled H-E-L-M-E-R, posted by Yves Smith, Y-V-E-S Smith, titled Meet and Greet Natalie Jaresko, U.S. Government Employee, Ukraine Finance Minister, and it reads in part, the new finance minister of Ukraine, Natalie Jaresko, may have replaced her U.S. citizenship with Ukrainian at the start of this week, but her employer continued to be the U.S. government long after she claims she left the State Department. U.S. court and other records reveal that Jaresko has been the co-owner of a management company and a Ukrainian investment funds registered in the state of Delaware, dependent for her salary and for investment funds on a $150 million grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development. The U.S. records reveal that according to Jaresko's former husband, she is culpable in financial misconduct. And skipping down into her background, Zaretsko was born into the Ukrainian emigrant community of Chicago, taking her name from her father, John Zaretsko. Her brother, also named John, has been active in Ukrainian movements and received a medal in 2010 from then-President Viktor Yushchenko. At the time, Sister Nathalie was an appointee of Yushchenko's Foreign Investors Advisory Council and the advisory board of the Ukrainian Center for Promotion of Foreign Investment. Yushchenko had given her the St. Olga Medal in 2003. The point being that Nathalie Zaretsko was also an appointee of Viktor Yushchenko, who, as we looked at in For the Record 781, basically remade the Ukraine with an Orwellian facelift, so to speak, to turn the OUNB into heroes, even anti-fascists and people who protected Jews during the Holocaust. Nothing could be further from the truth. And again, Viktor Yushchenko married Ekaterina Chumachenko, who then became Ekaterina Yushchenko and First Lady of the Ukraine. She was Ronald Reagan's Deputy Director of Presidential Liaison, a top OUNB/UCCA operative, and again became First Lady of the Ukraine. We're going to talk more about the UCCA later in the program. This article by John Helmer in the Naked Capitalism blog goes into the insider trading and the altogether unequivocal statements by Nathalie Zaretsko's ex-husband that she was, in no uncertain terms, guilty of serious financial misconduct. And as Robert Perry noted, it is ironic because the main impetus behind the popular protests, I mean, there certainly was a covert operation, big time, but Ukrainians were genuinely sick of decades of corruption and insider trading and incompetence. That was certainly true with the Viktor Yanukovych government, and it was true for many, many years before, including and especially under Viktor Yushchenko. Viktor Yushchenko's government was voted out with one of the lowest popular vote totals in in the history of electoral politics. What is ironic is what is being prescribed for as the cure for the Ukrainian economic disease. A predictable free market screed was penned for the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal of October 1st of 2014. It's by Anders Aslund, A-S-L-U-N-D, of the Peterson Institute. That is a basically a pro-austerity free markets think tank that basically advocates privatization, of course, deregulation, shrinking government, reducing government spending, reducing taxes as the magical elixir that will jumpstart the economy. It hasn't worked much of any place else and doesn't figure to work in Ukraine as well. However, when you know the truth, you are not generally bothered by the facts, and that certainly covers the neoliberals or libertarian free market advocates, as we call them here. Reading just a little bit from this editorial by Anders Aslund. External threats to Ukraine from Russia have dominated the news for months, but as that situation starts to stabilize, the country will need to confront an old internal enemy, corruption. Transparency International ranks Ukraine 144 out of 177 countries on its Corruption Perception Index. Corruption was at the heart of popular discontent with the deposed regime of Viktor Yanukovych, and widespread graft helps explain why the economy stalled in 2012 and 2013. Kiev must tackle this problem urgently, even as its leaders confront Russia's territorial ambitions. The scale of the graft under the previous administration, if the allegations turn out to be true, is breathtaking. Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk has accused the Yanukovych regime of stealing $37 billion from the state, equal to one-fifth of Ukraine's GDP in 2000, 2013 during his 4 years in power. And then skipping down, what is the prescription during its 4 years in power, during the Yanukovych government's 4 years in power? Now, what does Anders Asland provide as a cure for Ukraine? Skipping down. Cleansing Ukraine of its corruption will require several interrelated measures. In this regard, Estonia and Georgia, parenthetically, those were two of the countries from which Petro Poroshenko wanted to bring people in as cabinet ministers, and as we will see, that's exactly what he did, beginning again. In this regard, Estonia and Georgia have shown the way. To begin with, the state needs to limit its regulatory role by abolishing or merging many state agencies. Minimizing state interference in the economy, whether by privatizing state-owned assets or cutting regulations, reduces opportunities for corruption in the first place. The government should also cut public expenditures, and corrupted subsidies must be eliminated. The deregulation of gas and electricity prices in this case must be seen as a matter of combating corruption, not as a social issue. So again, shrinking government, merging state agencies, deregulation, privatization, the reducing government spending and reducing taxes, that is how to fight corruption, according to Anders Asland and others. And again, Anders Asland has cited, and apparently correctly, the Viktor Yanukovych government as extremely corrupt. Whether they were any more corrupt than what went before is dubious, but they certainly were corrupt and incompetent to the marrow. There was plenty of crony capitalism and manifestation of oligarchical rule as well. Now, who do you suppose was in charge of the Ukrainian economy under Viktor Yanukovych when all of this terrible stuff was going on? Well, we're going to let you know right now. A Reuters article from September 26th of 2012, Ukraine set to privatize hundreds of state firms, paper. And this talks about the Kommersant Ukraine newspaper reporting on the plan on the part of Ukraine to privatize hundreds of state firms, this as a way of jump-starting the economy. And it is just this that is being advocated as by Anders Asland of the Peace of the Peterson Institute as a way to combat corruption. And, well, guess who was in charge of that program? Again, from Reuters of September 26th of 2012, Ukraine set to privatize hundreds of state firms, paper. The Ukrainian government has drafted a law that paves the way for the privatization of hundreds of state-owned companies previously considered strategic, Kommersant Ukraine newspaper reported on Wednesday, citing a leaked draft document. Ukrainian Economy Minister Petro Poroshenko, yes, that's right, the man who is currently president, Ukrainian Economy Minister Petro Poroshenko, said this week the government planned to remove about 1,200 enterprises from a list of strategic assets that cannot be privatized, Ukrainian media reported, but did not name any. Then skipping down. Since President Viktor Yanukovych's election in early 2010, many privatization auctions have been won by his campaign's main financial backers, industrialists Rinat Akhmetov and Dmytro Firtash. And again, who was in charge of the Ukrainian economy when all of this corruption was? It would be incorrect to say that it began there. No, it simply was perpetuated and perhaps exacerbated. None other than Viktor Yanukovych, none other than Petro Poroshenko, who is now president and has brought in people from the U.S. and Georgia in order to help straighten out the corruption in the Ukraine. And as noted by Robert Perry, having a U.S. State Department officer whose capital fund, basically, who was managing monies that were put forward by the USAID, who also was the vehicle for Pierre Omidyar's funding of the Maidan coup. That woman is Natalie Jaresko, and she, according to her husband and available records, appears to have been very guilty of insider trading. So that does not bode well for the Ukrainian economy. And the Ukrainian economy is in very bad shape indeed. The Financial Times of London of December 9th of 2014 has an article co-authored by Peter Spiegel, S-P-I-E-G-E-L, and Roman Oldarchyk, O-L-D-A-R-C-H-Y-K. IMF warns Ukraine bailout at risk of collapse. And it reads in part, the International Monetary Fund has identified a $15 billion shortfall in its bailout for war-torn Ukraine and warned Western governments the gap will need to be filled within weeks to avoid financial collapse. The IMF's calculations lay bare the perilous state of Ukraine's economy and hint at the financial burden of propping up Kiev as it battles Russian-backed separatist rebels in its eastern regions. The additional cash needed would come on top of the $17 billion IMF rescue announced in April and due to last until 2016. As discussed in delightful thing, this you could pretty much guess at. Without additional aid, Kiev would have to massively slash its budget or be forced to default on its sovereign debt obligations. As we looked at, and for the record, 794, Ukrainian bonds are ultimately underwritten by the U.S. government. That basically is the U.S. taxpayer. That is you and me. Now back to the influence of the Ukrainian diaspora. Again, in For the Record 824, we concluded the program looking at Petro Poroshenko, former economics minister under Viktor Yanukovych, Petro Poroshenko's plans to bring in citizens from the U.S., Estonia, and Georgia in order to basically begin straightening things out in Ukraine. He also was proposing to give foreign nationals citizenship so they could staff the Ukrainian Federal Police, the equivalent of our FBI. And in addition to Natalie Jaresko, the Ukrainian-American State Department officer managing USAID funds and apparently engaging in insider trading, a woman who was also part of the Viktor Yushchenko team in the last decade, we now have a Lithuanian-born American who was educated in the U.S. as economic development and trade minister, and a Georgian national also educated in the U.S. as health minister of Ukraine. The BBC News of December 5th, 2014, foreign-born ministers in Ukraine's new cabinet, reads in part, skipping down after discussion of Natalie Jaresko. Ivaros Aivaros Abramovicius, Abramovicius, economic development and trade minister. Ivaros Abramovicius is a Lithuanian-born specialist in emerging markets investment. He graduated from Concordia University in Wisconsin, USA, with a BA in international business. And again, a Lithuanian-American is now the Ukrainian Development and Trade Minister, and he is not alone. In addition to Natalie Jaresko, there is also Alexandra Kvitashvili, that's K-V-I-T-A-S-H-V-I-L-I. I am probably mispronouncing these names. Skipping down, Alexandra Kvitashvili, Health Minister. Alexandra Kvitashvili is an experienced health official from Georgia. By the way, that's the country of Georgia, not where Ray Charles was honored. He studied history at Tbilisi State University and in 1993 received a master's degree in public management from the Robert Wagner Graduate School of Public Service in New York. After briefly working in the U.S., he returned to Georgia. So again, Petro Poroshenko didn't waste a lot of time. He brought in a Ukrainian-American State Department officer who would manage USAID funds as basically finance minister. And then he brought in a Lithuanian-American and a Georgian national, both of whom were educated in the U.S. to be the health minister and economic and trade development ministers, respectively. Again, in the article with which we concluded, for the record, 824, Petro Poroshenko was also proposing giving Ukrainian citizenship to foreign nationals so that they could basically staff the Ukrainian Federal Police, the equivalent of our FBI. It is against that background that the following stands out from the Politics and Human Rights blog, an apparently Ukrainian blog from the Cyrillic alphabet that is on the blog, of December 8th of 2014, an article by Halya, H-A-L-Y-A, Koynash, C-O-Y-N-A-S-H. Poroshenko grants Belarusian neo-Nazi Russian citizenship. I think it meant Ukrainian citizenship. This reads, when people are risking, often sacrificing their lives for their country, quibbles about questionable neo-Nazi views may be out of place. This is not the case where they are fighting for another country, and Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko's decision to grant Sergei Korotik, K-O-R-O-T-K-Y-K-H, a fairly notorious Russian, Belarusian, neo-Nazi, Ukrainian citizenship cannot fail to raise eyebrows. The president's website informs us that on December 5th, Poroshenko handed an internal passport, quote, to Belarusian Sergei Korotkik, K-O-R-O-T-K-Y-K-H, who has been fighting in the Azov battalion since it was created and is the commander of reconnaissance for the battalion. The president thanked Sergei Korotkik for his courageous, dedicated service, unquote. He also announced that the Defense Ministry, together with the Interior Ministry, is preparing a number of submissions to grant Ukrainian citizenship to fighters, quote, who selflessly defend the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. The courage and commitment of the fighters of the Azov Battalion has been demonstrated in military action over recent months and in their defense of Mariupol, and gratitude and recognition of their bravery are certainly warranted. The battalion, however, is known just as much because of the pronounced neo-Nazi views of its commanders and at least some of its members. Those views are shared by the foreign nationals who have joined Azov, including Sergei Korotkik. And again, bear in mind that the head of the Azov battalion, basically a Nazi fighting formation, is now a member of parliament. The deputy commander of Azov Battalion is head of the police chief in Kiev. I wonder how many other members of these Punisher battalions, how many other foreign Nazis and fascists will be given Ukrainian citizenship, and then I wonder how many of them will wind up in the Ukrainian Federal Police helping to basically enforce the prevailing regime. We're going to go into some real scary material being done by George Eliason, E-L-I-A-S-O-N. We relied on his work in, for the record, 783 to a considerable extent, and he also wrote a very long piece which comprised the vast bulk of, for the record, 824. George Eliason wrote this for the Op-Ed News on November 18th of 2014. Ukraine Punisher commanders in D.C. now to ask Warren, parenthetically Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, and McCain, parenthetically Senator John McCain, Republican from Arizona, for more guns. And again, what we're going to be talking about here, what Eliason has written about. By the way, he's an American who lives in Ukraine, and he is an internet development professional in Ukraine. I believe, of American extraction and an American citizen from the context of what is written here. In any event, what he notes here is that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is being lobbied by commanders of some of the Punisher battalions. This for the provision of lethal aid to Ukraine. That aid was provided in the bill that was passed today, December 12th of 2014. It has yet to be signed by Obama, but I have no doubt that he will, in fact, sign it. I will include that article in the description for the show, but it just passed today, so I'm not going to include it in the material that I am going to be reading. Now, note here that Andrei Beletsky, the commander of the Nazi Azov Battalion, is a member of parliament and is pushing for Ukraine to get nuclear weapons. That's one of the reasons I have been paying so much attention to the issue of the Ukraine. Note also that members, other commanders of the Punisher battalions are openly talking about invading parts of Russia. And the UCCA, that is the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front organization in America, is talking about the need for Americans to fight and die for Ukraine. Basically, this is serious. Again, Op-Ed News, November 18th of 2014, George Eliason. Ukraine Punisher commanders in D.C. now to ask Warren and McCain for more guns, reads in part. Within a few days, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is going to meet with Ukraine's best and brightest. They are coming to ask for money, weapons, and to start lobbying for direct intervention. They thought that the halls of the U.S. Congress can be sullied with this. They thought, I should say, that the halls of the U.S. Congress can be sullied with this kind of people treading on its floors is beyond my imagination. You don't need to care about Ukraine on this issue. American moral authority and well-being slash electability of some good congressmen that only hear the propaganda might be at stake. Please take the time to read through, and if this is not acceptable, tell your senator why. A few days ago, Vadim Troyan, T-R-O-Y-A-N, a battalion Azov deputy commander, was appointed Kiev Oblast Region Police Chief. Azov Battalion is one of the Punisher battalions responsible for rape, kidnapping, and murder of civilians across Donbass. Vadim Troyan has earned some of Ukraine's highest medals in the process. At their base city of Mariupol, just during the month of October of 2014, the police department had to report over 200 rapes committed by Azov and the Ukrainian National Guard in a public meeting held at the city's police department. According to local residents in Mariupol, which is a city of over 500,000, people are constantly going missing. Basically, kind of like the dirty war in Argentina, this is the dirty war in Ukraine. Continuing, young girls are dragged away in broad daylight, and some are never seen again. Azov Battalion is taking men off the street that are never returned. In the last week of October, 20 people were reported missing. Andrei Beletsky is also Arseniuk's choice as a parliamentarian in Ukraine's National Rada, or Senate. In fact, all the supposedly democratic Euromaidan leaders have chosen radical neo-Nazi representatives for Senate seats. Beletsky has sworn he will drive a vote on Ukraine's nuclear status. If successful, Ukraine will strive to develop nuclear arms. So again, Andrei Beletsky is driving for Ukraine to get nukes. Continuing, Sergei Melnichuk, M-E-L-N-I-C-H-U-K, Battalion Commander Adar, was Oleg Ryashko's choice for a Rada seat. Oleg Ryashko, head of the Radical Party, another neo-fascist party in Ukraine. In an interview with Foreign Policy magazine, the Azov commander Andrei Beletsky, now a Ukrainian senator, states, and again, this is the guy pushing for nuclear weapons, "Unfortunately, among the Ukrainian people today, there are a lot of, quote, Russians." And he then goes on to explain, but by that he means their mentality, not their blood. And what kind of people is he talking about? Listen to this. Again, this, the head of the Azov Battalion, a member of the Ukrainian Senate, and the guy pushing for nuclear weapons in Ukraine. "Unfortunately, among the Ukrainian people today, there are a lot of Russians, not by their mentality, not by their blood. Kikes, Americans, Europeans of the Democratic Liberal European Union, Arabs, Chinese, and so forth. but there is not much specifically Ukrainian. It's unclear how much time and effort will be needed to eradicate these dangerous viruses from our people. The battalion's political platform supports the system of government derived by the Ukrainian nationalists of the 1930s and 1940s. Really, look at the description of a, quote, Russian, unquote, and see if there's anything familiar here. American democracy is no different to them than the Donbass people. This point needs to hit home in light of what they are doing. Now, the others in the U.S. directly lobbying and successfully for lethal aid for Ukraine. Andrei Teteruk, T-E-T-E-R-U-K. Andrei Teteruk, the commander of Myrot Voretz, that's M-Y-R-O-T-V-O-R-E-T-S, Peacemaker Battalion, is also one of Yatsenyuk's choices that is taking a Senate seat. Andrei Teteruk, who ran for lawmaker on the People's Front election list, plans to attend parliamentary plenary meetings armed with weapons. I hope I will never have to use it, he said. That, folks, that is open carry, okay, when you're going to basically bring your weapon to the meeting of parliament. And again, in Petro, skipping that, in Petro's own words, Peacemaker is a police battalion. Our task is to restore order in liberated settlements, clean from criminals and weapons. We did a good job in Dzerzhinsk, performed police functions, investigated who supported the separatists in that city. And skipping down, another of the people, Yuri Bereza, B-E-R-E-Z-A. Yuri Bereza is the commander of Ihor Kolomoisky's Dnieper 1 Battalion. You guessed it. Yuri Bereza is also now a senator. What makes this clown a great pick for Maidan leaders to get behind is, quote, today we are ready not just to defend the Ukraine, but to invade the Russian Federation, break into it with reconnaissance detachments and sabotage groups, said Bereza. This last sentence again. Today we are ready not just to defend Ukraine, but to invade the Russian Federation, breaking into it with reconnaissance detachments and sabotage groups, said Bereza. Although I didn't mention him by name when I wrote about Bereza's most notable accomplishments to date, note the following. In a hacked correspondence reacting to the remains of 37 civilians found in Dnepropetrovsk, Ukrainian Rada, Deputy Oleg Pankovich questions Ihor Kolomoisky's sanity. Kolomoisky, one of the leading Jewish leaders in Europe, has his own Dnieper battalion in the Donbass War. According to Kolomoisky's assistant Boris Filatov, they are not just, they're just neo-Nazi animals. Kolomoisky's Dnieper battalion is replete with swastikas and neo-Nazi mercenaries from Ukraine and other countries. Among his more notable accomplishments, Kolomoisky funded and planned the Odessa Trade House massacre last spring. Kolomoisky has a new Nazi problem. Of the 37 civilians that were found tortured, mutilated, and killed in this instance, 19 were Jewish. That is why Pankovich called it a mini Holocaust. So again, the Dnieper 1 battalion also has its commander in Washington. They not only committed the infamous Odessa massacre in which basically separatists were herded into a building that was set on fire, and the battalion members then chanted neo-Nazi slogans. Of 37 civilians that were found tortured and murdered, 19 were Jewish, and the main funder of Dnieper 1 is Ihor Kolomoisky, one of Ukraine's top Jewish leaders. Again, Jews are by no means immune to participation in fascism and Nazism, as we have spoken about before. Another of the lobbyists, Semen Semenchenko, S-E-M-E-N-C-H-E-N-K-O. I have written extensively about Semenchenko's Donbass battalion. Semenchenko is also a new Ukrainian senator. His battalion accused him of running when the fighting started. So again, we've got Andrei Teteruk of the Peacemaker Battalion, or Myro Tvorets. We've got Yuri Bereza of the Dnieper One. And we've also got the Semen Semenchenko of the Donbass Battalion. They are in Washington, and they are being backed by the UCCA, skipping down in George Eliason's article. The ultra-nationalist Ukrainian Congressional Committee of America, or Congress Committee of America, UCCA, has been lobbying the U.S. Congress to give weapons to Ukraine. The men listed above are the representatives of the diaspora community chosen as representatives of their ideal of a Ukrainian nationalist in the Stefan Bandera mold. And again, of the propaganda that is being disseminated by the UCCA, skipping down. As I'm sure you know, and this is from an excerpt from some of their literature, as I'm sure you know, these three major, the Punisher Battalion commanders, are not only our lovely commanders of the Volunteer Battalions Donbass, Myro Tvorets, and Dnipro 1, they are also newly baked parliamentarians from Semplomenich and Narodny Front. And they are in Washington, D.C. this week to meet with congressmen and military officials and talk about how to defend Ukraine. At this very moment, Russia is training a 30,000-strong army in the occupied eastern territories and stuffing the region with its weapons. And Semenchenko asks for our help. Again, that from the UCCA, the top OUND front organization in the U.S. And that goes on to say, remember, Ukraine is not only defending itself, but also peace in Europe and the alliance between the U.S. and its biggest friend, Europe, as well as international law. And Eliason notes sarcastically, considering that they want the U.S. to attack Russia, should we thank them now or later? And then he goes on to add, what else do the Ukrainian emigres want from the U.S. Congress? Former Ukrainian Foreign Minister Volodymyr Ogryshko on Schuster Live, the largest Ukrainian talk show, Americans must be willing to die for Ukraine because the former Soviet Republic fighting with Russia defends the values of the Western world, and they are willing to die in Iraq and Afghanistan. If they are really talking about their values, they must be willing to die in Ukraine as well. Today, we protect their valuables, this and our values. We protect their lives and their blood. He is talking about America, said Ogryshko. He expressed the hope that the results of the elections in the U.S. will bring Ukraine support. And again, that is quite remarkable. The rest in this article, this is in the description, for the record, 826, but I'm not going to read it due to the limitations of time. Ukraine is now conscripting people 16 years and older, and apparently a lot of the younger people are being used as force prostitutes, basically to comfort men and women, or comfort boys and girls, given the young age, for Ukrainian soldiers. And again, some of the commanders of some of these units are forcing their conscripts to perform sex acts both males and females are forced to basically have sex with members of the units. Another very interesting article from George Eliason, this also from Op-Ed News of November 7th of 2014. Ukraine's second day of heavy fighting. Kiev shells sports facility killing children and admits no Russian troops present. And again, this is, we have spoken in past programs about the indications from intelligence sources that were accessed by Robert Perry, that in fact there simply is no Russian invasion of Ukraine, although they are providing some aid to the separatist rebels. In an interview with Gromadsky TV, Markian Lubvitsky, that's Lubvisky, the advisor to the head of the SBU, the Ukrainian version of the CIA, said there are no Russian troops on Ukrainian soil. This unexpected announcement came as he fumbled with reporters' questions on the subject. According to his statement, he said the SBU counted about 5,000 Russian nationals, but no Russian soldiers in Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics. He further clarified that there were no organized Russian units in Donbass. That, again, from the advisor to the head of the SBU, that is the Ukrainian Intelligence Service, the equivalent of our CIA. And skipping down, of the reports being submitted to the Ukrainian people and basically being taken at face value by the U.S., daily on Ukrainian news, official stories declare that the Ukrainian security forces are fighting Russian armed forces. As part of the propaganda, Ukrainians are told that the Ukrainian army is defeating companies of Russian paratroopers, Spetsnaz, Group Alpha, the Russian version of Navy SEALs, and all sorts of special forces. If you were an average Ukrainian, what would you think? I've been talking about the interview in which the SBU advisor said, nope, no Russian troops in Ukraine, no Russian military units, no invasion, in other words. The reporter doing the interview, ultra-nationalist Natasha Stanko, S-T-A-N-K-O, may not survive the line of questioning she started. Earlier, I reported on her tweet celebrating the Punisher Battalion IDAR murdering Ukrainian troops who refused to kill civilians. She thought that was funny. Again, that's indicative of the type of creatures that we are not only backing in Ukraine, but that are successfully lobbying Congress for weapons. And today, December 12th, that bill passed Congress. Now note that some of the information, some of the most remarkable information that was presented by George Eliason came from some of the few surviving Ukrainian media outlets that are willing to tell the truth, and there are some, but that may very well be a disappearing reality. We're going to conclude with the following story. This is from the Mashable blog, M-A-S-H-A-B-L-E, of December 2nd of 2014. It's by Christopher Miller, and it reads, in part, it's headlined, I should say, Ukraine just created its own version of Orwell's Ministry of Truth. This reads in part, the Ukraine government has established a department that critics are calling the Ministry of Truth, borrowing a term from George Orwell's classic dystopian novel, 1984. Officially called the Ministry of Information Policy, the new office will be headed by Yuri Stets, S-T-E-T-S, head of the Information Security Department of the National Guard of Ukraine. Basically, this is the guy who's handling the PR for the Punisher Battalions. Continuing, a close ally to President Petro Poroshenko, Stets was formerly chief producer of the TV channel that Poroshenko still owns. While its main objective appears to be confronting Russia's formidable propaganda machine, the ministry is likely to also restrict free speech and inhibit journalists' work, particularly in war-torn eastern Ukraine, according to observers. Skipping down, the creation of the Ministry of Truth, the creation of the ministry comes on the heels of critical reports from journalists and rights groups about its use of controversial weapons in eastern Ukraine, as well as possible war crimes committed by its armed forces. Skipping down again, the Ministry of Information Policy was pushed through with little notice and even less debate on the parliament floor. That could be because the president himself pushed the concept on members of his party, the largest faction in parliament, and has great sway over the ruling coalition. And that, again, is very interesting indeed. This concludes For the Record, program number 826, Bringing It All Back Home, Ukrainian Style, Part 2. This has been recorded on December 12th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.